Hi, and welcome back to Branded by Amelia Sordell, the podcast that peers behind the curtain of some of the biggest personal brands and entrepreneurs of today. We riff on their challenges, their failures, their lessons, and their wins. And I know you're going to get just as much value from listening to these conversations as I had from having them. So let's dive in. Sarah Ashcroft, thank you so much for joining us on the Branded podcast. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me. Honestly, whenever I get invited on any podcast, it's a complete honor. So I'm very excited.
Well, I'm really honored that you agreed, because I literally accosted you at the back of the panel session for the PR net a few weeks ago and was like, oh my God, I love you. I've been following you for ages. Please, can you come on the podcast? So I appreciate you saying yes. Yeah,
it's great fun, honestly. Who doesn't like talking about themselves?
I know, right? Well, I should know. I'm in the have my own podcast and I literally have an excuse to talk about myself the entire time. I want to first of all start with giving a bit of an introduction to who you are, and I think you're probably the best placed person to do that. So for those people who, and they're living under the rock if they don't know who you are, but for those people that don't know you, can you give us a bit of an overview of who you are and what you're doing?
Absolutely. So I started a blog back in 2013, which is crazy because I mean, I'm actually probably would be described as a dinosaur in the game now, because it's been over 10 years, and I started a blog called That Pommy Girl, which actually doesn't really exist anymore, which is kind of sad, but we can dive into that and probably why it doesn't exist anymore. And so I was what I think you'd call an early adapter into the sort of influencer industry. And yeah, I've been there from the beginning. I've seen it grow and change along the way and seen how, you know, that it's sort of shaped to the industry it is today. But it's also led me to start SLA, which I founded in 2019. So it'll be 5 this June. And yeah, it's been a whirlwind of a journey to get to the point I'm at now. But I feel very lucky to have had the career that I've had, and it's been a journey. So yeah,
1.2 million followers on Instagram, close to 140,000 on TikTok. You've obviously built an incredible platform for yourself. Why did you even get started with the blog? Because that was obviously pre-Instagram, pre-everything else. Like where did the why come from for that?
So I actually didn't go to uni. I'm not an academically clever person. Knew that like that sort of vibe was not for me. But I finished college and I was like, I'm not really ready to go into like adult life and jobs just yet. So I did a year at the Fashion Retail Academy, which is great. And actually such a good sort of step for anyone who wants to get into the fashion industry, but they're not sure what they want to do. I highly recommend it. And I did a year course, left and wanted to work in fashion PR. Every job interview I went to, they were like, do you have a blog? And I would literally sit in these interviews and be like, what the hell is a blog? Because I hadn't read them, didn't know anything about them. But I think because I was going in for like a junior entry level role, they clearly wanted that person to run the agency's blog or whatever the brand was and have, because it was like, that was what the good thing at the time to do was to have a blog. So I went home to my mum and I literally said, I'm going to have to start a blog so that when I'm asked in an interview, do you have a blog? And go, yep, I know what I'm doing. Hire me, give me the job sort of thing. And then, yeah, within 6 months, it sort of gained traction. My Instagram following started to grow. I mean, Instagram at the time was literally when it was the brown cream square logo. Like this was like real vintage Instagram.
But there's like the sepia filters. Yeah.
And I remember everything that was a square. And it was like, you know, that was like the good old days. And so the follow, yeah, I think I was posting like 6 times a day on Instagram, which is wild to think, because now it's like everything has to be so like curated.
Pre-stories, right?
Yeah. Oh my God, like pre-everything. It was just so simple. And I literally started to like gain a bit of traction, and I was like, I think I got like 10,000 followers in like 8 months. And wow. I was like, obviously at the time, I was like, this is wild. Like, why are people following me? That obviously translated across to my blog. And I started to monetize it with a platform which is now called LTK, Like to Know It, but it was Reward Style at the time. Right. And I started creating these like commissionable links. And yeah, and like I think I earned like £1,500 in my first month of doing it. And at the time, I was 22 and I was like, oh, this is so much money. Like,
I'm rich.
I'm literally rich. And yeah, and I realized that there was something in this. And then as I grew and then the blog grew and the readership grew, obviously the, you know, I earned more money and then Instagram was growing and it just snowballed into this thing, which is, you know, now what we call an influencer career. But at the time it wasn't. I mean, I remember telling my parents what I was doing and they thought I worked for Facebook because to them that was social. Yeah. So they were like, when they thought social media, Facebook was the only thing around. And my dad would often say, when are you going to get a proper job? Like, what are you doing? And I can very proudly say now that he is very happy with the job that I've got and he's very proud of what I've done. But that was literally what it was like in the early stages, because the word influencer wasn't even a thing. So, you know, it was I think we were very, the influences that were around at the beginning were very up against it because you were really looked down on whenever you went and explained anything you did because people were like, what do you mean? You post pictures online and you make money. Like, that's not a job. So yeah, it's been interesting. Now I do think it is amazing that like this whole industry has grown from that. And like the, even just the jobs it's created for other people on the back of it, it's like a force to be reckoned with, the influencer industry, for sure.
And it's interesting that you were just saying that, how many other jobs it's created, because people think of influencers, they do just think of like the individual who's kind of a paid for billboard promoting something. But the kind of thing behind that is now you have influencer agencies and like B2B influencers. And, you know, I guess it's kind of... very much in line with like where we are as society, which is like people want real, they want human, they want authentic, and kind of shove messaging down people's throats, which is what, you know, marketing used to be like, right? It was like talking at you from above. If you think of like Mad Men, for example, let's shout at the consumer from above and like tell them why they should buy us. Whereas now it's all about influencing people from within. And I guess the influencer, and when you would have first started, was kind of the primitive version of where we are now. I want to go back to, and this is what happens in this podcast, by the way. Welcome to therapy.
No, it's fine. I'm loving this.
I want to go back to, you said you didn't want to go to university. Did you enjoy school? Like, what was that like
for you? No, I mean, I was literally like that kid that was in the bottom set of all of like any of the like English maths, you know, things like that. I loved textiles. I loved, you know, like, I think that we did, I can't remember what they called it, but like, you know, when you do like cooking and things like that.
Yeah. What's it called?
I don't know what it is. Home tech or
food tech. There you go.
Home tech.
Whatever. I love it how we're like, it's a cooking class and we're saying everything tech, but food.
You know, anything that was creative, I loved, but I just felt very, I just knew from a young age that I wanted to be rich. I'm not going to lie. I was like, I love money and I want to make money. Like,
can we just have a moment for that? I love that you say that, because so many people are scared to admit that.
I
love money too. I want to drive a Lamborghini.
My favorite saying in life is, I'm fine being high maintenance because I'm the one maintaining it.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that all women should strive for. You should be high maintenance, because if you're maintaining it, it doesn't matter. But I was literally, from probably about the age of 10, my dad called me 5-star. Sarah, I would literally pull up outside a hotel and we'd with my family and go, how many stars is this? And I was 10 years old. So I always knew that there was something in me. And so I think even being at school, I was just like, I just wanted to go out and make money. I just knew I did. So, but I knew I wanted to work in fashion. And obviously when you're younger, the fashion industry is a bit of a monster and you're kind of, it's overwhelming. But I just knew, and God, I never thought I would be doing what I'm doing, but I just thought I was going to work in, like, you know, a bit like Devil Wears Prada, and I was going to be working at a fashion magazine, and I was going to be wearing fabulous clothing, and I was going to, you know, Sex and the City vibes, and it was all going to be really cool. But I just think one thing that I always say to people, I'm like, never be afraid to not go to uni. Because I just think, like, I think it's a little bit archaic now that you, like, you go to school, you then go to uni, you get a degree. And, like, I just think the times have changed so much that jobs are so different these days. You can literally work from home. You can create jobs online. I mean, even people like, I mean, OnlyFans is a thing these days. Do you know what I mean? You can make money in any way. And I think that one of the things, I think, especially for young people, that they have to just like trust their gut and go with what they feel like is right and don't conform with it. Because I didn't. I remember my dad was really, I think probably most of my parents were a little bit like, you don't want to go to uni. But actually, I'm living proof that if you just follow what you want to do, it normally works out.
It's really interesting, actually, because I didn't like school either.
Did you not?
Every single person I've had on this podcast that's built a business, like from scratch, has also said I hated school.
Yeah.
And I wonder, and I've said this before and got in trouble for it, but I'm going to say it again because I don't care. I really do think that school raises you how to think.
Yeah.
And like raises you what to think. Yeah. So it's like grades are good, so study to get grades. Grades then get you into university, which you have to get first in order to get your job done. It's like this checklist of I need to do what they're telling me in order to be successful. And I wonder in many respects that entrepreneurs, or at least people that I've met like yourself, and I certainly think this, don't enjoy school as much because we're not like that. Like our brain is wired completely differently. You know, before we started recording, like Ollie, our producer, was laughing and saying that I change my mind all the time. Like I literally change my mind all the time.
Yeah.
And it's because it's just like constant, constant, constant. And that manifests itself at school as like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Why are we doing that? Why do I have to learn about Pythagoras' theorem? Why can't I learn about tax? And then that get, yeah. you get in trouble, and then you get this like negative reinforcement of like school's really miserable.
Yeah.
And it means that like you just don't end up enjoying it.
100%. And you're so right, because it's, as we were saying before we started filming, with the like changing the mind constantly, whenever you meet anyone who's entrepreneurial, we're all the same. Like we've got yeah. this like, can't sit still. We're always thinking of the next
ADHD.
Thing. ADHD. You know, like as I said to the girls in the office, a lot of the time they're shocked at how often I change my mind. But it's just until I feel 100% with the decision, like I'm going to keep changing my mind.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, you're so right, is that you know... And you know, uni is right for some people. There are careers that you do need to go and get a degree, and that is fair enough. But I think these days, there's so many more things that you can do that didn't exist however many years ago, that it's like, go out and just like follow that little thing inside of you that's saying, I want to do more than just get a degree. Because there's so many people that are living proof that you can turn it into something, you know?
And I think also, like, going back to what you said earlier about you going out and starting the blog to get a job. Yeah. Like, when I first started my career, interestingly, we both started our careers in PR. Like, I started out in the first... internship I did was at Marks & Spencer's Food, Wine & Flowers PR department. Then I worked at Myla Lingerie. Then I worked at Hilgo PR. And I did all these different kind of internships while I was getting my degree, which I hated, by the way. Yeah. I wish I had not gone to university. Actually, no, I don't, because I went and I did it. But I did it to keep my parents happy. Yeah. I didn't do it because I wanted to. I wish I had the balls like you did to be like, no, I'm not doing that. But it's funny because actually it's those internships that I did where I was doing that taught me so much more than I learned from, you know, the 3.5 years I was at university. And I imagine your blog taught you more about how to PR yourself and a thing than anything else.
Yeah, no, definitely. And at the real early stages, I would, you know, I remember turning up to meetings with like fashion brands, and it would be like a room full of men, and like you just weren't taken seriously at all, especially being a 21, 22 year old like blogger. Yeah. They were like, why are we working with this girl? Like, who is she? So it kind of like, especially for now, because obviously, you know, this happens often where, you know, I'm still quite young, I'm 29, I go into so many meetings still with men, and they do have a similar approach, but I'm sort of equipped for it because it's happened from such a young age that I know how to deal with it, and like it doesn't affect me like it used to. You do learn. I think life teaches you more than educational school probably ever will, you know, because you can plan and you can be prepared and you can be as educated as you want to be, and then life will literally smack you in the face, you know.
Yeah,
like that is
hard as well.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's really hard.
It's so funny because I think like no one prepares you for that.
No,
like we know that because our asses have been kicked quite a few times. Yes. I'm sure like mine have been kicked many times, quite substantially. But it's actually those things, it's so fucking cliche, but it's those things that teach you so much more about everything else.
100%.
And it also galvanizes you a little bit. Like I now don't give a fuck about taking risks.
No,
I'm like, oh, calculate it. Like I'm not gonna gamble everything on one thing. No. But I'm cool if something doesn't work out.
100%. No, definitely. I feel like really when you take the risks as well, like even if, I mean, it's so cliche, isn't it? Like you do learn more from your failures than you will learn from when you succeed. That is just an absolute given. And I would hear that on podcasts before I started SLA and became like a bit more of an entrepreneur. And I used to listen to that sentence and think, oh, it sounds, but I'm like, oh, I'm actually, no, that's like the best thing to live by. So now whenever I want to risk something or I'm a bit nervous, I'm like, no, because if it fails, I will just learn from it. It's never going to be a waste of time. And that's, I think, the best way to just look at everything in life, is that if it's going to fail, you're just going to learn from it, you know? And if you don't do it, you're always going to think, what if? Which is a really horrible way to live as well. So you've got to just try everything and just hope that it works out.
But no, it's so true. I think of so many people. So I was literally talking to someone yesterday about this, and I said, I used to always respond to life with fear. So like scared of losing something, scared of not having enough money, scared of a relationship not working out, scared of being rejected, scared of not getting that job, like fear.
Yeah.
And I went through COVID and like had this like epiphany where I was like, fuck this. Yeah. This is shit. You know, ended my marriage, started a business, quit my job. Like just went like full.
Real change.
just like small changes, you know, slight iterations of where I was at. And my entire approach to life now, it sounds really wishy-washy, but I stand on a fucking hill about this, is approach everything with love.
Yeah.
So like when, the really good example of this is I get so much shit, as I'm sure you do, on social media from people who are clearly angry at themselves and like sad, right? And so they feel compelled to be like, I get comments about how I look. I get comments about like I'm like just really nasty stuff, which me 20 years ago would have crumbled under.
Yeah.
And now instead of me looking at that being like, oh my God, I can't believe they think I'm ugly and I've got fake lips and blah, 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 blah. Now I look at that and being like, oh my God, are you okay?
Yeah. So if you want to almost be like, are you, is everything all right at home?
Yeah,
do
you
need to
right.
talk about something? Because it's a reflection of them, isn't it? It's not a reflection of you.
No, like, but like that mindset shift for me has been massive. And 100%. I don't think I would have come to the conclusions that I have of like this whole life's going to come at you so you can respond with fear or love.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have come to that conclusion had I not fucked up so much.
100%. No, definitely. I think when you're not afraid of failing, it opens
an entire new pathway.
100%. Like, not being afraid to fail is probably one of the best things that you can embrace.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I used to be like that. I would always be such a perfectionist. Everything had to go
what
right.
What star sign are you?
I'm a Cancer.
I'm a Virgo.
Are you?
Similar with that.
Yeah. And so literally like when I would always want everything to go right. And obviously very quickly, especially running SLA, learned that that doesn't happen. But then when you start to fail, you think, no, everything's still okay. Like I'm just getting through it. You learn how to deal with it. And it's actually a very nice like way to live life, I think. So,
and also you only get to that point once you start fucking
100%.
Up. 100%. Like, so it's like just fuck up and get it over with.
100%. Like you want the biggest fuck ups to come quickly so you can
so you can move forward. Yeah, just get them out of the way. Yeah. I mean, my first business when I was 21 failed and went bankrupt in year two. So like that was a good first
nice.
One to get.
Have the first failure out of the way and just get on with it.
In your 20s, no problem, move on. So you started with the blog and then you started posting on Instagram when it was still the sepia beautiful squares that we remember. Oh God, I wish I'd not deleted all my posts and archived them so I could go back and look at
Well, I think actually if you wanted to get all the way down on my Instagram, which would take forever, there is literally still the first thing I ever posted. Don't know what it is, but
you should post on LinkedIn with that picture and be like, this is what started my career. I love that. So what was the journey from like getting to 10k followers and like you're starting to make like a bit of a career out of this, you know, you're getting paid through the affiliate links and things like that. What happens next?
So I started doing like full-on collaborations with brands, so I'd have like collections with brands and like, you know, little ranges or edits and things like that, where I would start earning like 20% of the sales or 10% of the sales or like whatever it might be, and they would always sell out.
Yeah.
And I was really like, what I loved about doing those collections was like sitting in the design meetings and like designing everything and like the fabrics, and suddenly really just like felt alive when I was in these meetings and really understood that, like, well, I say understood, realized that I had been almost like unintentionally absorbing all this information over the years of doing my like influencer career, that I had like really understood exactly what my followers wanted. And so when we designed collections, I think the reason they just sold out was because it was like I designed exactly what they wanted, you know? It was like, I just realized that's what they want. And so when I'd had these sellout collections, I just had that little niggle that I was like, okay, I'm getting 10%, I'm getting 20%, whatever it might be. But what happens if I'm gonna get 100%? And that was sort of like the little like spark that started SLA. Plus also, like, I always say this to any of my sort of influencer friends within the industry that haven't turned the influencer space into something more, is that like, you have basically spent however many years you've been doing it for, doing this sort of like market research, creating this platform, which people would pay a lot of money for. If you don't turn that into something, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Because my fear, like, I remember I used to wake up most mornings with like this weird anxiety. I couldn't really work out what it was. And it was the feeling that if this all disappeared overnight, what would I be left with? I can't sell an Instagram profile. I don't have anything that's like literally bricks and mortar. And that fear like scared the shit out of me. And so now I was like, I've got an actual business. At the end of the day, I can be like, this is what I worked towards. This is why I grinded and did everything I did and gave up like a lot of time and money to get to where I am, but it's all paid off because I've got this amazing business that at the end of the day also I can sell, because you know, that money part of me is still there. I want the payday at the end of the day, you know. I will be on a yacht and I will remember, you know, it's going to be called SLA. But like, I just think
should call it the Pommy Girl.
Exactly. Oh, should, do you know what, that's it, it's called that Pommy Girl. It's going to happen. I'm going to manifest it now. But I think that's the thing with the influence industry. I think it's such a powerful tool that I think you've got to to use it to its potential and find something. And I know starting a brand is not for everyone. I'm not saying go and start a brand, but maybe it's something as simple as like a subscription service or an online thing, or you're selling like just something. When you have a bit more of an entrepreneurial brain, you think of it like that. But I just think like you've got such a power as an influencer that's like you've got to turn it into
something.
You've
got influence.
Yeah. 100%. But I do think it's obviously like, I think for me, being an early adapter in the industry has helped with that, because there were so few influencers when I started that like what I'm really grateful for is I've got such a community of people that have grown up with me. And I've really nurtured that relationship. And people that follow me and have followed me for a long time know that I will not talk about anything I don't 100% love. They know that I won't like post anything I turn down probably 90% of my paid work because I don't like the product, don't believe in it, don't want to wear it. And I think that's such an important thing in the industry, is don't sell your soul to it, because that relationship that I nurtured is now kind of paying back to me, because my followers know that when I'm talking about a product, I love it. And it's also translated into SLA, because it's like when I'm producing clothes, or you know, they know that when I talk about the quality and say the quality is good, they know that it is, you know. And I think nurturing the relationships is so important. That sense of community is important. And I think especially for like new influencers these days, it's like, don't worry, don't try and make every video go viral, don't just worry about the numbers, because actually creating that real niche community that's really engaged with like in you is way more important, because at the end of the day that's what sells. And if you're in it for that, then I think that's actually important.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because obviously with what we do, right, everyone is kind of like obsessed with numbers. And you know, when are we going to get that viral post, and when are we going to hit that 10k follower count, and when are we going to And the thing that we always start with clients is like, what is your goal here?
Yeah.
Like hypothetically, you know, with your brand, like what would your, if going back, we were starting again now, what would your goal be in getting that influence? And I think there's a lot of people in the industry that come into the industry going, well, my goal is 10K followers, because if I get 10K followers, then brands will pay me to promote their stuff. Yeah. And like, that's not enough anymore.
No.
And something that I thought you said was really interesting on that panel talk that we met on was you were saying that, you know, for you as a brand owner now, influencers fall into three buckets for you. Yeah. One is like content, one is sales, and you'll forgive me for what the other one was.
Yeah, so you've got content, you've got like sales, and then you've got like expertise, which is also like if you're in like the skincare world or something like that. But it is definitely become even more apparent now because the influencer community is so saturated. So like, you know, there are loads of influencers, but unless you are either making sales or your content is on point or you're like an expert, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to fit into one of those three categories.
It's like billboard conversion, like brand awareness, really, isn't it? Or education.
It's,
and I think your point is bang on, which is you have to dream bigger than 100K likes, because at the end of the day, like, attention's really valuable, but only if it becomes something.
100%.
Like, there's no point in you, like, for example, writing a book
and
everyone wanting to buy it, but no one paying for it.
Yeah.
Like, you need to be able to get something out of it. And I think what you've done, which is why I so desperately wanted you on this podcast, was you've taken influence and this incredible community that you've built of people who are like ride or die Sarah fans and gone, I got you. I know what you want.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take this now off that platform, and I'm going to own that community and not only monetize it, and that's great, and get you on that fucking yacht, but I'm going to make something that's more like, it's a legacy. It's like beyond just being famous on Instagram. Because I do really worry. I saw this study recently and it said 25% of high school girls want to be influencers.
Yeah,
like that's their like career aspirations. And I looked at that and I was like, part of me is like, first of all, I love the fact that people want to put themselves out there because we've come from I grew up in the 90s and you're a couple of years younger than me, but would have grown up in a similar era where like, if you didn't look like Kate Moss, you were like fat. Yeah. Like they used to put pictures of girls on the top of magazines with like one bit of cellulite, being like, oh, Beyonce's put on weight. It's like, we grew up with that. And so now we're in an industry where women are happy to like, you know, show who they are online. Like, and I love that.
Mm.
But also like, baby girl, like dream bigger than having strangers on the internet validate your 100%. Existence to get paid.
Yeah, and there's also a real warped perception, I think, of like, oh, I want to be an influencer now. The word, I don't personally think you can call yourself an influencer unless you're actually influencing someone to do something, whether that's buying something or I don't know, you know, the people that like motivational and they're like helping people through like hard times in their lives, or whether it's like,
and it doesn't have to be a product, right?
No, it doesn't
it's
have
knowledge
to be a product. It can be anything. But I think the word influencer is used so like wrong these days, really. Mm. I mean, I don't even call myself an influencer because I don't like the word. I would rather be known as just like a brand owner who's come from the like content creation space, or like a blogger or whatever. But I just think, like, unfortunately it has got negative connotations around the word now, but I think it is because there are some people that think that like being an influencer is just looking pretty and standing and taking pictures in your outfits. And it's like, there should be more to it than that, you know? Yeah. I think if you want to be like a proper influencer, you got to think like, what am I putting out there? What am I sharing with people? Like, am I making someone's day better by what they're seeing from my page? Or, you know, I think it's sad when people are like, oh, when I grow up, I want to be an influencer.
Like, what's the why?
Yeah. Because also, like, I didn't want to be an influencer. This has just happened, you know.
But that's my point. Your why was you wanted a job.
Yes, I wanted a job. And I do think, like, at the end of the day, like, if you're going to be an influencer, do it because you want to do something more, maybe. I don't know if it's like you want to share like a passion you've got, or I really want to be an influencer because I love how I style clothes and I really want to share that with people.
Yeah.
Or I'm really into like dating tips and I really want to share that. Like, find a passion rather than like, I want to be an influencer.
Yeah.
You know?
It's almost like a cop out, isn't it?
Mm.
It's like, I don't know what I want to do, so I'm just going to like build a following.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you had an end goal, which was you wanted to get a job. My end goal when I started my LinkedIn was, I just literally wanted to spread the message of like this cult that I just discovered, which was like, isn't it amazing when you start looking at the world in a different way? And like, I want to share that. I had no intention of growing a massive following or starting an agency out of it or anything. It was just, I just wanted to do something that I loved and share that with everyone else.
And I also think that's a really important thing in the industry, is that like, if you are doing something, let's say you want to be an influencer and you're like, it's not working and it's making you sad and it's like you're stressing out more about it because you're not getting followers, you're not getting likes, like, it's not worth it.
Yeah,
like, life is not worth that. Like, you should be doing it because you enjoy it. And
love it,
normally if you enjoy something, you're probably going to find it's going to turn into something better because you're just not thinking about it. But if it's really, at the end of the day, like, you're trying to do it, it's not working, it's making you sad and depressed and whatever, just don't just give up.
And also, not everyone needs to have 100,000 followers.
No.
It's not the be-all and end-all of life.
It's not all it's cracked up to me. And I promise, like, take it from someone who's been on Instagram for 10 years, it is all rose-tinted glasses. Yeah. Like, life is not as good as it looks online, you know? We only show the good parts. No one's posting their failures, as they say, so.
That's one of my favorite topics.
Yeah.
We need to get you over to LinkedIn so we can share about them. So I want to get into SLA, because as you just so well said, was you don't want to be called an influencer anymore because you're not. You're a brand owner.
Yeah.
I actually think you're more than that. I think you are a brand.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, your influencer side and then the SLA. It's like, for me, your whole Sarah thing is the brand. So first of all, you said that the collections you were doing with these other brands is kind of what sparked your, I guess, creative streak.
Yes.
It sounds to me like you've wanted to be in the fashion industry forever anyway.
Yeah.
So what an amazing segue. How did that come about? And what was the kind of trigger point for you? Or was it really organic that you were like, actually, I want to do something with what I've built?
I think it was literally a mixture of the sort of anxious wake-ups I'd have, thinking like, oh my God, if Instagram and everything went down. Actually, I know when it really happened. It was when, you know, when Kylie Jenner woke up one morning and she said she hates Snapchat.
Yeah.
And then everyone just stopped using it.
Yeah.
So Snapchat, for me, I used to love it. It had this really nice little small community. It was like guaranteed views of a certain amount. It was like 50,000 views on every video, and it was amazing. And then one morning it just disappeared. No one used it anymore. It was wild. And that really, like, I took from that, like, how quickly things can change in social media. And so that was the real, like, start of me going, okay, what am I doing? Like, what am I turning this into? And then obviously, as I said, I'd had the sellout collections with brands, and I was like, loved the designing aspect, but I wanted it to be my own. And literally was just like, I'm just going to start my own brand. I had no idea what I was doing. And like, genuinely thought it was just going to be the designing the clothes and everything was going to run smoothly. I completely forgot that there's like the financials and the logistics and the really shit parts of business that I'm going to have to deal with. But I didn't think about that and just went head first into it and like put all my own money in and just hope for the best. And yeah, it went well. But I mean, I think it was a year and a half in that I realized that I'd been pricing everything wrong for a year and a half. So I hadn't actually been charging enough. So that was a lesson I learned really quickly. So I'd just been like creating a cost price out of like nowhere, and a sales price even. And then, yeah, someone once basically told me, you know, you should be selling this for like way more. And I was like, why? And they were like, because this is what it's cost you. So this is what your sale price should be. And I was like, oh,
So you're not making a profit?
Well, I was making a profit only because everything was selling out, thank God. But like, not what I should have been, not like a normal markup. Like, I don't know what the markup was. I think it was probably like 40%, which is like nothing. So, you know, those are the kind of lessons that you learn very early on. But yeah, I think it was that thing where I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I've got to start. I'm just going to start and see what happens.
Did you have any mentors when you first started?
No, I mean...
Do you have any now?
No, not really. I mean, I've got people in the industry. I've got friends that have businesses. And I've got amazing, like, other, like, entrepreneurial people that I do. Because I think that is important when you're an entrepreneur. Mm. I think you've got to surround yourself with other people that have the same, like, drive, you know, and want more. Mm. But no, I don't have any mentors. But I think... I've also learned the importance of employing people, because I mean, I am the first person to admit that I do not know everything, especially about running a business. So employing people that know more than you is just so key. And that massively helps. Like, now I feel like I've got a team that I would say going into the fifth year of SLA is probably the first year where I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Like, I can do this now.
Yeah.
And it's honestly taken me 5 years to get to that point.
One of the most frequently asked questions that I get when it comes to building your personal brand is, what should I be posting? And that is why the Get Clout membership is so powerful. The Get Clout membership will give you a personalized personal branding strategy, which will tell you what channels you should be posting on, who you should be talking to, and what you should be saying to them, and how often you should be saying it. The Get Clout membership allows you to attract the audience that you're trying to attract and position yourself as a thought leader in your space by delivering you tailored content prompts every single day to help attract the audience you need to attract to make that happen. So head on over to clout.com/membership to find out more details on the Get Clout membership and to understand why over 1,000 people have signed up to our membership to help building their personal brands today.
I can relate to that. We've just hired ops director, which is like a huge hire for us. We haven't had anyone kind of sitting in that A seniority, but also B like skill set before.
Yeah.
And it's changed my, like, the game. Like, like even the 3 or 4 weeks he's been here, it's just been unbelievable. And I think it's really, really, really important that you learn as quickly as possible. And like, it's taken me almost four years to learn that lesson. You have to hire people who are better at you than the stuff you're not good at.
Yeah, yeah.
And also have the humility to be like, I'm really good at that. Mm. Fucking shit at that.
Yeah.
You do that. I'll do this. We'll be great. And I think a lot of founders, particularly solo founders, really struggle with that because they feel like if they give up that part of the pie or, you know, that skill set or whatever it might be, then in some way, like, they aren't good enough.
Yeah. I think the worst mistake you can probably make as a, like, founder of a company is pretending to think you know it all.
Yeah.
Because you just can't be good at everything. I've never met anyone who is good at all the aspects of,
like, it's impossible.
You're either good at, I think you're either good at the creative side or you're good at, like, the business financial side. There's not really ever anyone that's why I'm always jealous of someone who's, like, got co-founders. And it's like, one of them's the creative and one of them's the business head. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just the creative and I'm just getting by.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I think when you were just, I mean, I'm not, I don't really micromanage. I just trust that people are good and they'll get peanuts having a breakdown in the corner.
This is what happens when you bring animals into the studio. He's like, I'm so over this, guys. I want to
snack. Boring me. But yeah, I think that's why the importance of employing good people, but also just really just being open to the fact that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
And that's okay. How it'd be weird if you did.
Right.
Especially but
we all
age.
Think that we do need to, like, and actually I find, so we work with a lot of male clients, and I think it's because typically men have a bit more, like, give it a go, like, we'll just see what happens. Whereas I think women feel like they need to be perfect and everything. Yeah. That's a mass generalization, but it's just an observation. Don't kill me. I do think, though, on that point, women, and particularly being, you know, women that are running businesses, and I really hate the concept of female entrepreneur, that bullshit, but, like, that's not really where I'm going with it. Women, I think, are scared to make mistakes and therefore don't take risks and therefore don't actually often get the opportunities they deserve because they're worried that if they make a decision and it's wrong, that people are going to think they're not good enough.
Yeah, 100%. Plus, I think it's just as women, we worry more, don't we? Yeah. We think about what's going to happen a year down the line, whereas men just think about what's happening tomorrow. Maybe not even thinking that.
Yeah.
You know, they might be thinking about what they're having for dinner. So it's like, I think as women, we do just genuinely worry more, which does make decisions and big, like, choices in business potentially a little bit harder.
Yeah, and feel a lot more scary.
Yeah.
It's like that. I don't know if you've seen that meme of that woman who's standing underneath the wave and the wave's, like, absolutely massive. I feel like that sometimes. Like I'm just looking up and it's this huge wave. Yeah, honestly. it's gonna crash down on me.
But I feel like my mum said to me once, it's like worrying is like walking around with an umbrella waiting for it to rain.
Oh my God, I love that.
And I was like, when I thought of it like that, I thought that is so true. Like you can't spend your life just thinking something's gonna happen, because 9 times out of 10 it doesn't.
Yeah.
So I think, and that almost goes back to my thing that I said earlier about that fear of failure. It's like fail because it's never as bad as you think.
But also you're always gonna fail.
Yeah, 100%.
Always. Like that's something that we all, and actually the whole participation medal, like reward people for trying, all that kind of stuff, I think is really actually counterproductive to that point, which is you're going to have to lose at something along the way. Like whether or not it's, you know, you asked for a promotion, they said no. You asked someone out on the date, they said no. Like rejection is a huge part of like being able to get ahead, 100%. Because it just happens, right?
Yeah. And I mean, SLA is the perfect example of like failing or trying new things constantly, because we started off as a loungewear brand in 2019. That was because one of the things I knew I was really good at selling was loungewear, because I'd had the previous experience. So I thought, easy way in here, let's do sweatshirts and joggers. And there was a real niche for it at the time, because I just didn't think there was anything that was like oversized and like colorful. Then obviously loads of loungewear brands came around, and then loungewear's hard to be unique at, I think.
Yeah.
So also luckily I launched with that, because then COVID hit 6 months later and I was literally sweatshirt and jog brand. I mean, we had the best COVID ever. Like we were selling out. It was great. But then obviously got out of COVID and I was like, if I see another sweatshirt and joggers again, I'm going to kill myself. So I was like, I don't want to see them. Then I started SLA, what was called SLA Lux in 2021. And yeah, that was like sparkles and things. And really that was when I realized that that's what I was kind of missing. I was like, I loved the design aspect of it and like how unique you could be with it. And then, yeah, it took up 60% of our sales that year. So it overtook lounge.
Wow.
And then we just saw the sales of lounge sort of dwindle off. And I just thought, do you know what? I've got to pick a lane here. Cause it was like running two different brands. Yeah. Like they were so different. And the sparkles just won because why wouldn't they? And then obviously we launched the iconic glitter suit in 2021 and it just literally broke the internet. I mean, we actually broke Shopify when that launched, which I had heard was not possible, but we actually did it. Like it was a complete like breakdown. And yeah, and then that was like a real like turning point for the business, because we'd created this iconic suit that then everyone wanted and it grew the brand. It was amazing. And then, yeah, that was then SLA just became what it is now, which is a sort of a occasion wear brand, I guess.
What's been your biggest failure since starting the business?
Oh God, there's so many. I would say, well, obviously the first one was the pricing thing. That was a big failure because it was such a disaster that I was pricing everything wrong in the beginning. I would say one of the biggest failures was I put a hell of a lot of my personal money into diversifying the product range too early. And it didn't like work out, shall we say. And what I always say to new business like owners or founders is that like just pick something small and start with it and really like nurture that and let it grow before you want to diversify. Because that's one thing I wish I'd done, is I'd like just gone a bit slower. It was like I was like, oh my God, I've got to do this and I want to try this and I want to try this and I want to try this. And it just really didn't work out for us. Now I've learned to like, I think probably from the last year, like everything we do now is very like thought out and very slow. I will take forever to get something right now. Whereas before I'd be like, no, it's fine. We'll just put it on. And I'm like, no, now I would rather it take an extra month and be delayed than rush it. And I think that's come from learning about when things have gone, because nothing I've rushed has ever worked out. It doesn't work out. So now I'm like, the slower I take it, the more patient I am, the better it's going to be. And so that's like my new vibe. It's just like,
slow down.
Yeah. Because I used to be like, oh my God, it's not going to be there for the launch. Like, we're just going to have to do it. But now I'm like, if it misses the launch day, it's fine.
Yeah.
I'd rather the product be amazing. But also we've had huge failures with manufacturers. Like we had disaster with two manufacturers when we started out, where they were okay to start with, and then they started like changing fabric for production. So when the production would reach the warehouse, it was completely different fabric from what we'd approved. The fit was wrong. Like honestly, it was disaster. And we're talking like 20-30 grand worth just gone down. Didn't even put it on the website because it was so bad. Wouldn't give us our money back, and that was literally like costly in the beginning. So all those things you go through has taught us a lot. But I think, as I said, it has taken me literally 5 years to get to a point where I feel like I've got a good manufacturer base. I've got like an idea of what I'm doing, and hopefully this will be like, I feel like this is the first proper year of SLA. I'm like, all the other years they were just a rehearsal. This is when it's actually going to be good.
I feel like that too, actually. I feel like this year is the first proper year of clout, and like we've got all of our ducks in a row now, whereas we were sort of like testing stuff before.
100%. And that's why, like, I think it's so okay to not get it right straight away, because I think that is another thing I hate with social media, is we live in this world, especially now, it's like this trend to like be a business owner. It's like create these like Pinterest
don't work for the man, like work for yourself. I'm like, do you know what you're saying? Like, trade your 9 to 5 for working 24/7, 100%. Dude.
And I think like people are very, obviously it's that thing, people are not posting their failures, so people don't realize that like it takes so much work to get something right.
And also the emotional turmoil that you go through, like especially when you have employees, right? Payroll, like, are we gonna make payroll?
Honestly,
what if that client doesn't pay us? Like, what, like all the things,
like cash flow is literally like, I don't think I've had a proper night's sleep in 5 years, because as an early, like a business, like we don't have investors, everything is very like self-funded, so like cash flow is an issue, you know, like we're constantly trying to maintain it. We've got an amazing CFO now who's really helped that, but like it still is hard, you know. And so you do have a lot of sleepless, basically thank god for Botox, because I think I'd look literally 10 years older if it wasn't for Botox at this point.
Oh, I love how real you are. It's it is one of those things though, I do think it's really glamorized, right? Because all people see is like, you're on this podcast and like, here's my brand, I'm a brand owner, and like all this kind of stuff. And actually the reality is that you work, you get up, I get up at 5:30 every morning, I work before my kids wake up, I then take my kids to school, and then I'm here in the office all day, and then my kids are in bed, and then I'm back on the tools again, and it's like non-stop. I've never had a day where I wasn't thinking about the business in some capacity since I started it.
And it's so funny, I mean, obviously I love that my followers want to see more behind the scenes of SLA, but I'm like, you, if you want me to vlog a day in the life, it would be me getting into the office and sitting there for 8 hours with my laptop, and then I'd leave. Ollie, and that would be the video.
Ollie does my vlog, and every now and again he'll message me and be like, boss, I've only got like 4 minutes of footage that I can use, because the rest of it is
because
you just
actually
doing stuff.
Running a business is not glamorous.
No, it's not.
It's actually like the things you see on Instagram, like when there's all these like girl boss pictures and like all this sort of stuff. Like, don't get me wrong, I do try and like do a couple of them, but it's not real. Like,
no.
I go into the office 9 times out of 10 wearing leggings and an oversized sweatshirt with no makeup on, and because I'm just there to get shit done.
Yeah.
You know?
It's 97% admin.
Literally. It really
3%
is.
3% glam.
I know. And it's like, unless, and but I think it's that thing, isn't it? Unless you feel like you've got something to announce or like talk about, people don't think it's like going well. I don't know.
Yeah, Grace Beverly talks about that. She talks about being announceable. She's like, unless it's announceable, people don't want to talk about
it's
it.
It's so true. Yeah. It's literally so true. But it's like, actually, like running the day-to-day of running a business, I think I'm like, when I see other entrepreneurs, and I'm like, that's the shit that you should talk about. Like, that's what you should be proud of. When you literally get into the office in the morning and someone tells you that there's been a massive manufacturing disaster, or, you know, something's happened, and you are literally there owning it and dealing with it, that's the shit that actually means something, you know?
And that's the shit
stuff you want to post, but it's not glamorous. You're not going to post it, but that's actually what's really makes you a great business owner.
But why wouldn't you post that?
Because it does, it's literally the generation, because it's like the picture wouldn't, like what would you take? Be like you having a meltdown in the corner and then you smiling in the next carousel when you've sorted it out like 4 hours later. You know, you can't get it across the same way you could if you're like, oh, here's me with my clothing rail with my new collection. Like, how
after I just cried over the clothing rail breaking.
Like, literally, like, this clothing rail, these products are stuck on a ship at sea, but don't worry about that. Here's the rail. You know?
The realities.
Oh, honestly.
I want to bring it back to your transition from influencer into brand owner. I think there's a lot of, we spoke about it before, there's a lot of people who like go into being an influencer and that's their goal, and they build these followers up and they get paid for brand deals and blah, blah, blah. I actually think now, people are brands, and obviously because I run a business doing that, but you've become a brand. How have you managed to, I guess, because SLA for me could stand alone now without you.
Yes.
Like, you're obviously the face of it, you're the founder, like, and you have your own founder brand to kind of go alongside that, but that business can grow and scale and maybe exit one day without you. How have you managed to build both, continue to build your personal brand and your influence and your community while simultaneously kind of separating and scaling SLA?
I mean, I don't know if I am. I feel like some days I'm like, that's been, I would say, one of the hardest things for me is I've had to take a step back from the influencer world to run SLA, because I'm a big believer that if, like, nothing works unless you give it 100%. Mm. And so it has been a hard transitional period for me, because I don't do as much filming or vlogs or YouTube or any of that now. I turn down a lot of work, which has been hard as well because I make a lot less because I'm putting my time into SLA, which I'm hoping will come back to me and it will all be worth it. But that has been a very strange shift to me because it's like so having to slightly move away from what I love to this new thing that I love. But having said that, I do think, going back to this whole 5-year thing, I think now I'm actually at a turning point where I think I'm ready to be able to do both again because I've got an amazing team at SLA now who really helped to run it smoothly. And I think I'm in that position to have both going the same. Yeah. So maybe you should ask me that question in like another year. But I think I really want to just get back to like, I just think I want to get back to like the things I loved sharing with my followers, you know, and like even now trying to like be a bit more like day in the life with SLA and having that time to do that. But I think the thing with like a personal brand and why I feel like SLAs work so well and like people buy into me is it's because it goes back to that trust element and the fact that they've been with me for so long and people just, I don't know, I think that they just feel part of something. And that's what I think is so powerful with personal brands, especially for like influencers and celebrities, is that your followers literally feel like they're part of it, and they are, because I am 100% aware that without anyone who's followed me for all these years, I would not have SLA. Like, it wouldn't have happened. And I'm so grateful for that because, you know, if people didn't care about me, I wouldn't have the job I have. So it is, you know, they are part of the brand. They are literally part of it. And that's why I love designing clothes for them because it's like, you guys, without them, I wouldn't be where I am, you know? And I think that is what really people do buy into these days. But it was like I said, they said this on the panel talk that you came to, you know, the rise of indie brands during the pandemic was huge because these huge, like massive companies couldn't do the normal things they would do, like take everyone away on trips. And, you know, everyone was very much just like in their living room. And so people really bought into the lifestyle and the behind the scenes of all these smaller brands. And that has carried on outside of the pandemic. And I think that's the power now, is that like, it's almost like the influencers have kind of translated across into just normal brands. Like, you can have a brand and not have been an influencer, but if you manage to almost turn that brand into an influencer, that's a power, because people just love feeling like they're part of something, you know?
It goes back to, you were saying like your why, right? You're creating all these clothes for these for the people, but you would have made a connection with them in some way as well. Like, there would have been a void or something that was missing from their life that they found in you and have connected with. And I always think it's really, really important. And, you know, you're talking about doing the day in the life of and that kind of stuff. And I think you'd find that your followers would fucking love that.
Yeah.
Because they feel like they know you, they want to support you and all that kind of stuff, but it makes you real.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's one of the reasons why I talk so much about my failures and my fuck. Like, I did a post a couple of weeks ago where I was like, I fucked up last year. I did this, I did this, I did this, I did this. And some of the stuff that I spoke about, I got messages from executives being like, whew, I was punchy for posting that. Like, and I was like, yeah, but it's the reality. Yeah, it like is. This happened, and I can look back on it and go, yeah, this happened, but now we're great. And now I've had some time to reflect on it and, you know, all those things. I don't mind sharing that with people because it makes me real.
100%.
And I think the more you can make yourself real and not an influencer or a brand, for lack of a better word, the more you get out of it. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier about, don't worry about people following you or liking you. Just do what you fucking love.
Yeah, just do what you love and people will...
They'll love it too.
They'll come, do you know what I mean? But I think that's actually like one of the things that I really want to see within the influencer industry this year, and I'm going to try and do it myself, is I feel like we've gotten too into this like polished, everything's got to be perfect. Yeah. Like, and I just think, let's just try and be a bit more real, I think, you know, and really just share the ups and downs of life and things that are going on. And that is something I really want to do this year, I think, is like just be not so worried about everything looking perfect.
Be Sarah.
Because I am literally like, I'm the first person to admit that I want everything to look perfect, but life is not perfect.
Yeah.
So it's like, why are we pretending that it is?
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, if you think about even the Kardashians, right? The reason we all started watching them in the first place, because they were like at their mum's house, like bitching about, like it was so real. And now it's so not real. And it's almost like, and their, you know, their viewership is going down and down and down. And I think it's because people can't relate to it anymore.
Isn't it? Like, I miss the days when Chloe was taking selfies, or Kim was taking selfies on the way to prison.
I know.
Are those days, but that's it, is literally that.
Literally, and like a camcorder.
I think also, like, consumers and followers and all that, they're not stupid, like, they've been educated to this like fake world. And I just think we have all got to try and make an effort not to like feed into it, and actually, let's all just be a bit more real. And yeah, I think people are gonna hopefully realize that everything you see online is a lie, and we'll hopefully turn that around so that it's just all more real.
What advice would you give to someone who was like Sarah 6 years ago, where you'd built this platform and they wanted to create something off the back of it?
I would probably say, as in when before I started SLA.
Yeah, so yeah. Like the thought process and like what steps you took.
I would literally say, if you've got that thing that you know there's like that always that niggle that you like think you can do something more. If you feel like you've got that, you've got to try, because you don't know where it's going to take you. Like, I didn't know that SLA was going to succeed. I had no idea. There was no like, this is a guarantee. But I just knew that it was a passion. I wanted to see where it went. Mm. And as I said, 9 times out of 10, if you're passionate about something, you will make it work. And I think, like, you know, as I said earlier, if you are an influencer listening to this and, you know, I've said like, turn it into something, just start really small. Just try whatever that thing is that you think you want to do, because you just don't know where it's going to take you.
Do you think there is anything that you would have done differently?
Oh my God, there's so much I would have done differently. Like, I mean, as I said, with SLA, I wouldn't have like rushed everything so much. I think it was because like, and I'm, you know, not ashamed of this, like I did come from a very fast fashion background. I worked with a lot of fast fashion brands. That was one of the reasons I wanted to start SLA, because I wanted to, like, I think there was a bit of a gap in the market for something that wasn't fast fashion, that wasn't super expensive, but it was a premium quality, but you're not paying like a lot of money for it. It's just things you don't want to throw away. But because I came from a fast fashion background, I'd been sort of educated to like, everything's got to be like loads of newness and lots of diversity within the product ranges, and let's do all this and loads of different colors. And I think it's taken me almost 5 years to like uneducate myself on that and be like, we don't need it to be like that. Actually, let's take some time. So I think that's definitely something I would have done differently. But I don't know if I would have done it differently, because actually I probably would have still done it.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think that like urgency also came from like that scarcity of like, what if all the followers go away?
Yeah, 100%. I remember when I started SLA, I think 2020, like for everyone, was like a hard year, but I think 2019 was the beginning of like my, like I was actually struggling with my mental health because of that fear. It was like, if I don't succeed and it all goes away, what am I gonna do? Cause it was like, I think I almost had imposter syndrome, because I was like, how have I been so lucky to get all of this? Like, what have I done in life that I deserve all this? Surely it's just going to disappear. So I think with SLA it was like that, this has to work. I've got to try everything and it's got to work, it's got to stick, because I'm going to lose everything. It was a very weird time. Whereas now I've like had time to process all that and dealt with a lot and gone to therapy, you know, she's sorting herself out, you know, and all that sort of stuff, and I have a much more calm attitude. And like, you know, it does, it's life, isn't it?
I think also like when all these things happen and when you make all these mistakes, we've said it already, but you like, it's funny because when stuff happens now, when it goes wrong, I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
Whereas before I'd be like, oh my God, like how are we going to solve this? And this is like, everything seemed like a huge 100%. Deal.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'll still have a mental breakdown, but I'll probably like an hour later go, pull yourself together, we can do this. I'll still have the breakdown, but.
My life coach, I'm saved in his phone as Menti B.
Nice.
Like if your life coach is saying that, maybe you should go to some like real therapy.
No, I think that's good.
But no, like everything always felt like it was a huge catastrophe. Yeah. Like if there was a spelling mistake in something, it was like a huge deal. Like, and of course these things matter, but actually in the grand scheme of things, when you're trying to build something, if you're trying to build a house, you wouldn't cry over the fact there was a stone this big that was out of place. You're trying to build a fucking house.
Yeah.
And I think it's those moments going through that is what actually makes you 100%. Probably a bit more level-headed
definitely.
In the end.
Yeah.
Was you not getting funding intentional?
I mean, it wasn't. I just was, I don't know. I mean, I had like some savings and I just thought I'll just put my own money in. I mean, I'd never say never to investment, obviously. Like, I would never say that, but it's...
Shout out any VCs listening.
Yeah. But I'm also just really... like, I want to see how I can do this on my own. I want to, like, you know, we're growing probably a lot slower than we could have done if we'd had investment. And, like, but, you know, it's sustained growth. You know, we make a profit and it's, you know, and it's, I am a control freak. So, like, I like that it's just me that I have to answer to, you know. And I think I'll go as far as I can like this until it feels like it's time. But, I mean, I just also love that I am proof that, like, you can. I mean, obviously, I know I was in a blessed position because, yes, I did have, like, some serious savings I could put into it. I'm not sitting here saying I grew it from nothing. Like, I put in a lot of money.
But you did. But that's your money.
But it was my money, you know. But, yeah, just it wasn't really – maybe because I think it's just when you're young, you don't really – thinking even about that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's funny. We're completely bootstrapped as well. Like we've never taken investment. Everything's been organic. And again, we've probably grown slower as a result of it. But I'm same as you. Like I am unemployable.
Yeah.
Which also probably makes me not a great investment because I don't really want to adhere to your rules and like your budgets and like what we need to hit. I want to do what I want to do. But it's funny because I think the world celebrates funding.
Yeah.
Like you get $2 million in funding and like it's all over the news. Like, 100%. Oh, this company's raised funds. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You make £2 million in profit.
Mm.
Nothing.
No, 100%. And that's the thing. Like when you're not a company that gets investment or things like that, it does almost make you feel like you're failing. But then you've
which is ridiculous because a lot of these companies don't even make a profit ever.
I know.
Like Uber, I don't think made a profit until they'd been an IPO like 2 years after they IPO'd.
Yeah.
What? I know. And they're like a billion-dollar company that made no money.
I know. It's like unless you raise or you're getting all these like interest from investors, it's like you're doing something wrong. But I don't think that is. I think there's something so nice about creating it yourself and being really in control. And actually, there's nothing wrong with slow, sustained growth. It's actually a fucking power, you know?
Yeah. And also, like you don't have to be a unicorn either. And that's another thing that I think is like such a shame that we push onto people is like, oh, I'm trying to build the next unicorn. It's like, yeah, but why?
Yeah.
Evolution of the brand. Mm. What is next for SLA?
So I feel like this is the first year that we're going into it exactly how I envision the brand to go for the rest of the time. Now, I'm saying that now, ask me in a year, probably gonna be different. But as it stands now, I feel like the ranges are very different from things we've done before, but they feel very me. And I think that's why I love them. It's a real sort of like reflection of my own personal style, which I think maybe I hadn't been doing up until now. Although I do love sparkles and I do love oversized blazers and things like that, I felt like I didn't want to wear like everything, and that felt weird to me. So I feel like moving forward, the collections are much more thought out. Like I feel like when people see them, they're going to be like, oh, this looks amazing. It's such a collection. Mm. So we've got amazing bridal range launching at the end of March, which is exciting. So we sort of dipped our toes into bridal last year, but we just did what we already did in white. But this year, it's like a fully designed collection. It's amazing. There's like, I say bridal, it's your hen do. It's like literally everything before you get married, you know? So it's all your hen do outfits, your rehearsal dinner, or your even like registry office kind of vibes. And then, I mean, we're also potentially thinking about launching earrings. So that's new. We're going into the
Accessories. Because you love an earring, don't you?
I love an earring. And I also just think, like, when I see something that's, like, becoming a thing, I'm like, I want a piece of that. Like, I could sell that. And it's maybe that's the entrepreneurial thing. You just think, I could sell my own earrings, so let's just do that.
I can do it better.
Yeah. So, we're just kind of, like, little diversification here and there. But, yeah, it's just basically, I really just want a calm year. If anything, I just want a year where everything goes somewhat smoothly. Don't think that's ever going to happen, but
you could try. The reason I asked was because you said earlier about how kind of you just iterated, and now you're at this point where it's like it's at the point you want it to be. I feel like both with companies and brands and personal brands, you have to constantly iterate and constantly grow and constantly evolve and constantly change. Like when I first started Clout, we were just a branding agency. Yeah. We worked with everyone and anyone. We specialized in personal brands, but we used to work on company websites. We did company social media, like all this kind of stuff. And it only took me about 6 months to realize I fucking hated it.
Yeah.
And it was miserable.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to work with these people on these company brands. And therefore we iterated into just doing LinkedIn for personal brands. And then it became LinkedIn and Twitter. And then it became LinkedIn. Now we do the whole spectrum. And, you know, we've now launched a tech platform in January. Amazing. So it's like a whole other iteration. And I feel like it's very easy to sort of find your niche and then be like, I'm going to dominate that niche, but then very quickly get left behind. 100%. Because
you see it all the time. Like there are so many brands that were really big back in the day and they've just stayed still and they're doing the same thing. But then other people have come in and done what they're doing, but maybe better
or faster or cheaper.
And they I think the worst thing you can do is Uber, stay still.
Airbnb.
Exactly. You've got to keep evolving. Like you have to. And in all areas of the business, whether that's your product or whether it's your social, anything, I think you've just got to keep growing and never ever get comfortable, because the moment you get comfortable, something's probably going wrong, you know?
How do you get that data to then make those decisions to grow?
I don't know. I feel like it's just that we really do listen to like our customers, like the feedback we get as well. And also, I mean, gut feeling. I feel like it's, I mean, I'm not a very like data driven person. I'm very much on like a feel, and like I just knew that like there was something that wasn't connecting right with the brand, and I have changed it. And now I, as I said, I feel like this is the first year where it feels like it makes sense. But like your gut feeling is literally the most powerful thing, isn't it? Like, it's never wrong.
I'm so glad you said
it's
that.
It's never wrong.
Because everyone goes, oh, data driven, no, like follow the data. I'm like, data's great.
Yeah.
And Liam's going to kill me for saying this because Liam's our ops director and he's like, everything is data. But like, if now, if my intuition's saying no, I'm like, no. Like, I don't even need to know why we're not making that decision. I'm just not doing it.
100%.
And every time I've not listened to my gut, it's been the wrong decision.
Definitely.
Every time I've listened to my gut, it's been the right decision.
Yeah, like, whenever I listen to other people and my gut is saying the opposite, but I go with what everyone's telling me to do, it's always wrong.
Always wrong.
And so that's what I've learned over the last 5 years as well. So now I'm like, my gut is telling me something, there's a reason. Sometimes it is wrong, but then it's just you learn from it and then you know. But like, I'm literally, I can sit in a meeting even with someone like my CFO who will be saying something and I'm like, in my gut, I'm like, this just doesn't feel right for me or SLA. So I don't do it and I go against it because I'm like, this is, and then at the end of the day, when it is your brand, like you know better than anyone else.
We have that with clients too. Like 99% of the people that contact us to work with us, I say no to.
Yeah.
And probably of that 99%, about 95%, I couldn't tell you why.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't connect. Yeah. I couldn't put a finger on, you know, it's not that they don't have enough money or their budget's not right. It's like all the things actually line up in terms of a marketing qualified lead, but they're just not the kind of person that we want to work with.
Yeah, 100%.
There is so much power in going, no thanks.
Yeah.
Like, even if you're going to put 120 grand on the table, which is a lot of money for an agency, just saying, you know what? No, because actually what we're going to do for you in terms of work is going to be nowhere near as good as it could be.
Yeah.
If we actually really connected and we were aligned on that.
Yeah, 100%.
And it sounds to me like this year is probably going to be your best year yet because you're aligned to your brand. Yeah.
And it does. It feels like everything I've felt flow. Now feels like it's feeling right. You know? And literally, I said it to some of my friends in January. I was like, I just feel like I got it together this year. Like, it feels like everything has just fallen into place at the right time, that now it's going to go like as smoothly as it possibly can running a business.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
The last year, was it really hard for you?
It was hard. I would say it was hard in the sense where, like, it was the first year that we were running SLA as, like, full glitter. So we learned a lot. We still had a very successful year. So I don't know if I can say it was hard. But
the reason I ask is, like, when I first started the business and I just once, you know, I'd kind of got over the fact that it wasn't going to be just me and actually I did want to grow it. The advice that I had from someone who is amazing and he's exited his business and he's really fucking smart. He said to me, year 3 to 4 is like the honeymoon period's over.
Oh.
And that's when like shit gets real.
Yeah.
And you actually have to start really, like, you're no longer in love with your business because like it's not this cute, fun thing that you're playing with anymore. It's actually like a vehicle that's moving whether you like it or not. And sometimes it moves in the wrong direction. And that's really horrible. And you've got to deal with all these problems and you have staff and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And he said, but once you get over that and you get through that, because most businesses fail at that point.
Yes.
Once you get through that and you get over that and you get your ducks in a row, it's like everything just goes into flow.
That's
and
so then, weird. I mean, I didn't,
and I'm there now. Yeah. So I'm wondering whether like there's like a synergy between our journeys of like my year was that year last year. And now I'm like completely in flow of like where we need to be.
Because I mean, I wouldn't have even thought, but that's probably so right. Maybe it was that I was like, okay, this shit is real. Like, this is a business. I'm paying all these people's like salaries. Like, this has to work. A lot of pressure. But then I think, you know, we've gotten to the end of 2023, had a really great year. Like, we made like really great profit and like our EBITDA had gone up so much more than it was. And it just felt like, yeah, okay, like this is working. And then maybe you're right. Maybe it's now I'm like, oh no, this is just going to work. Whereas I think last year, as you say, I was just thinking like, what's going on?
It's like still that anxiousness. Yeah. Like, you know what you're doing now.
Yeah.
And you still love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year for me, it was like, oh, is this right? Like, I don't know if that's right. Like, I don't know. Like, it's like the whole, like, the honeymoon was definitely over last year.
I love
year.
That. So I didn't even think there'd be a honeymoon. There's a honeymoon period in every relationship, isn't there?
And you it's like 2 years. Yeah, 2-3 years. Yeah.
Business. Like, it is a relationship.
Yeah. It is.
And, you know, no relationship is perfect and all relationships need work.
And also, I think it's important to say that not every day, even when you run your own thing, is fun. Like, sometimes I wake up and I go, I don't even want to go to work today.
Oh, 100%. Like, literally, I have days where I'm just like, where are the days where I'd wake up as an influencer and I'd go for a breakfast meeting and that was it, and a coffee and take some pictures. No, it's fine. I love SLA. It's like my calling in life.
That's peanut barking.
Look at him, he looks so angry.
He can come in. What's next for you outside of SLA?
Oh my God. I mean, is it weird to say that I don't think of anything else? I don't even think about myself.
No, it's not, because it is my entire personality as well.
I'm like, if someone said, what are your hobbies? I go, having a business, genuinely. But maybe it's because it's new, I don't know. And it's like, consumes everything. But yeah, I'm if I'm being honest,
it's the business.
It's just SLA.
Yeah.
Really?
I love that you said that, what are your hobbies? Because I do think there's like this misconception that like CEOs or MDs get paid all this money and they get to do all these fun things. Like literally all of your time is spent working. Oh
my
God, honestly,
like my hobbies are my business and drinking wine. That's like a hobby for me.
And you drink wine because of the business.
Exactly. Yes.
And then have coffee so you can get over the drinking
really
wine.
Ranked up. I mean, we do that hobby probably 3 times a week now. It used to just be on the weekends, but.
I love that. Okay. So I have a final question for you, and this is something I ask everyone. I always say to people, like, just fucking post it. And what I mean by that is post the content you want to post, live the life you want to live, do whatever the fuck you want to do, mm-hmm. because you're going to die anyway, so yeah. You may as well just go for it.
Yeah.
What is that one die on a hill message that you have that you want the world to be like left with?
Honestly, it's gut instinct. Like, your gut instinct is genuinely the most powerful thing within you, and I think it's always gonna be right. Like, and you know when it's telling you something, and you've got to listen to it and don't fight it and just go with it, because I mean literally it will always guide you in the right direction.
And even if it's the wrong decision, yeah. there's a reason why it guided you.
And if it goes wrong, guys, it's a lesson, remember that. Okay, it's just a lesson, it's not failure, it's a lesson.
Win or learn.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, what's one of our values at Clout is like win or learn.
That's so good.
And the tagline is failure is an option here.
Yeah, we love it. What a nice way to leave that. Win or learn, I love that.
Sarah, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's been such an easy conversation.
Thank you for listening to this episode. I absolutely love doing these podcasts, and I would be able to reach a hell of a lot more people if you like and subscribe. So thank you to all of you who have already liked and subscribed. And if you haven't, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review so we can reach more people.